It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, Nikki Haley, she's out. It's Trump and Biden, part two. Two, chuckling at the voters. Jen Psaki, Rachel Maddow, laughing at borders on MSNBC. And three, the Fox News power ranking poll. Trump and Biden, where do they stand on the issues? Where do they stand in the states? Where do we stand today in the race for president? It is the Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com and on the Fox News YouTube channel, the Fox News Facebook page, and on demand, Will Cain Show on YouTube. There's a link right under this live feed for the Will Cain Show page on YouTube. Hit subscribe and you can get this show whenever and however you like in video format, in exclusive clips or in video shorts or in the entirety of the Will Cain Show. And always available on demand in audio format, go subscribe at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. It was Super Tuesday, and it was a Super Tuesday for Donald Trump. Let's get into the race for president, starting now with story number one. Nikki Haley suffered a resounding defeat on Super Tuesday in a virtual sweep, although she managed a primary victory in Vermont, a resounding victory for former President Donald Trump. Nikki Haley just 1 hour ago, about 1.5 hours ago, conceded, suspended her presidential campaign, but declined to endorse Donald Trump. Listen.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind.
Nikki Haley's lack of endorsement for Donald Trump matters in part, but in the total is meaningless. Here's how Nikki Haley's potential endorsement matters in part. Donald Trump, dating back to 2020, has shown a magnanimity towards the vanquished. He has shown open arms to those who have lost to Donald Trump. If you go back to the debate stage in 20, this was pointed out on the Fox News Channel last night by Kellyanne Conway. Virtually everybody on that stage in what was a vicious primary fight for president, going back to not just 2020, but 2016, everybody was on that stage in 2016, was welcomed into the orbit of Donald Trump. Whether or not it was Chris Christie as a personal friend, whether or not it was Ted Cruz as a fighter in the Senate, whether or not it was Marco Rubio advancing his policies inside the United States Senate, Rick Perry, who served in Donald Trump's cabinet. Once you lose, Donald Trump offers the olive branch. You could even see that's already been done with Ron DeSantis. The reason that is of import is that what happens with Nikki Haley in the next, I would suggest, 7 days, matters for her political future. With his history of forgiveness, with his history of, quite honestly, deal making and coalition building in an attempt to win, Donald Trump welcomes in his former opponents. If you ask me today who's the leader in the clubhouse for vice presidency on the ticket with Donald Trump, my answer would be South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. I think he checks many of the boxes, including being a passionate fighter for Donald Trump since he himself lost to Trump. But I do not think it beyond the realm of possibility that a ticket could be Trump-Haley. I do not think it beyond the realm of possibility that Donald Trump would consider Nikki Haley as his vice president. Today, people are upset. Today, people see the stark policy differences between Trump and Haley. But as he looks to put together coalitions, he looks to put together a win, he would potentially see there are some net positives to Nikki Haley. One of the places he has historically struggled with suburban women. He's also struggled somewhat with the country club Republicans. You can see this in Super Tuesday. As you see, urban centers are some of the strongest places for Nikki Haley. Well, that's places like Charlotte, North Carolina, or Raleigh, Virginia, states that he wins by 30-point margins, but loses to suburban and urban moderate country club Republicans. To some extent, Nikki Haley offers that up for the ticket. The other common refrain I hear among moderate Republicans is concern over the competency of Trump's cabinet. Who would make up Donald Trump's administration? And from these reluctant Republicans, they want to see more accomplished executives. They want to see, whether or not you or I agree, they want to see Rex Tillerson. They want to see someone like Nikki Haley. Now, would that help Donald Trump bring over the moderate Republican? Would that help him with the country club Republican? Would that help him win? I think there is an argument, therefore, that yes, in pursuit of a win, in pursuit of a deal, Nikki Haley is a possible vice president for Donald Trump. But that's all dependent upon how she handles her next 48 hours to week. Will she give the endorsement that she denied right there in invoking Margaret Thatcher? Will she endorse? Will she support? Will she passionately rally behind Donald Trump? But in totality, the answer to that question is it doesn't matter. It's of little value, the endorsement of Nikki Haley. As of today, the vote for Nikki Haley is gone. And with that, the power of Nikki Haley. There is no one out there. There is no coalition. There's no driving force. There's no big passionate fan base. There is no base for Nikki Haley. All Nikki Haley has ever represented is what every other politician has represented for the past 8 years, an other vote to Donald Trump. That's all Joe Biden was in 2020, and that's why he ran a basement campaign, because he didn't need to make an affirmative case. He didn't need to sell himself. He could sit tight and rest assured that in 2020, the election would be a referendum on Donald Trump. And so much of the opposition to Trump is still defined by simply those two words and nothing more, nothing deeper. It's just a psychological revulsion or passionate acceptance of those two words. Donald Trump. It drives people to vote for Nikki Haley. It drives some people to vote for Joe Biden. But once that other is no more, the power of the actual individual is gone. The power of the endorsement is gone for Nikki Haley. She is now no longer the other to Donald Trump. Now, that leaves us with today. The only other to Donald Trump today is Joe Biden. Get ready for Biden-Trump round two. Donald Trump is now making a bid to be the first president since 1893, since Grover Cleveland, to be elected twice non-consecutively to the office for president. And the only thing standing in his way right now is a senile and fragile old man that a significant percentage of the country has soured, and more importantly, a larger percentage of the country has simply lost interest in Joe Biden. One could argue that Donald Trump would get elected to president in 2024 by copying the election strategy of Joe Biden in 2020, simply remaining in the basement. Because as opposed to 2020, the other now to Donald Trump is not a blank slate. It's not an empty box. It couldn't just be filled by Nikki Haley. It couldn't just be filled by Ron DeSantis. It can't just be filled by Joe Biden, because Joe Biden is a known entity. He has 3.5 years of presidency. He has 3.5 years of evidence. He has 3.5 years of your and my life that turns this election into less now of a referendum on Donald Trump and more of a referendum on Joe Biden. To some extent, the Trump vote is solidified. It's in place. I knew many people that converted to Trump between 2016 and 2020. I'm one of them who saw the COVID insanity, that saw the race insanity, that saw the value and the exposure of Donald Trump, who saw the positivity of the policies. And I think there was a sizable contingent of the vote that converted to Donald Trump between 2016 and 2020. Anecdotally, I don't hear as many people between 20 and 24 who have converted to Trump. But that coalition largely remains. Larry Kudlow last night on the Fox News channel said 97% of voters for Donald Trump in 2020 are still there and passionate for Trump. Meanwhile, 80% of voters for Joe Biden remain committed and passionate. Joe Biden wants this to be a choice between Biden and Trump. What it might just end up being is a choice between Joe Biden and nothing. If you see the enthusiasm polls, and we'll run through the Fox News power rankings, the deep dive into the exit polls last night on Super Tuesday. But one of the things that will jump out to you undeniably is the lack of enthusiasm for Joe Biden. I'm not talking about the Trump voter. I'm not even talking about the moderate Republican now. I'm talking about the Democrat. On the far left, you saw 19% of Minnesota voters. You saw 13% of North Carolina voters. You saw 9% of Massachusetts voters vote uncommitted. But more importantly, you hear about the moderate Democrat who is exhausted by Trump and Biden, who is exhausted by the reality that is Joe Biden's America. And what Joe Biden is running against is apathy. What he's running against is a no-show. What he's running against is a fraction of the vote that he got in 2020. Because of this, because I think of this reality, there is one certainty and one potentiality. The potentiality is that Democrats have to see this light and understand they have to switch out Joe Biden, that he cannot win. Between his frailty, senility, lack of accomplishments, and apathy of Democrats, by the convention, they have to make the switch to someone like Gavin Newsom. The certainty, though, is that in order to combat that apathy, in order to inflame passions, buckle your seatbelts. Get ready. Starting tomorrow night with the State of the Union, get ready for fear porn about authoritarianism, about quote-unquote saving democracy, about the future of America, whether or not it will be lost and whether or not this will be the last election of America, whether or not Donald Trump would leave office were he to win again as president. Get ready for fear porn when it comes to abortion. Get ready for calling everyone in the opposition a racist or a fascist. Get ready for fear porn to inflame passions. That is a certainty of Democrats. We'll see if that certainty is enough to avoid the potentiality of replacing Joe Biden. For now, it is Trump Biden part two. What happens now with Nikki Haley is of little consequence. Perhaps she's a candidate for vice president. Her endorsement means nothing to the outcome of Trump-Biden round two. Coming up, former NBC Sidelines reporter and the host of the Michelle Tafoya podcast will join us to talk about the reaction last night. Really, honestly, the grotesque reaction on MSNBC that I think reveals a true hatred of your fellow man as they chuckled. They laughed at the concerns of Virginians. They laugh at the concerns of America. That's coming up in just a moment on The Will Cain Show.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Laughing, chuckling, dismissing The concerns of Americans, you have to hear this audio from Jen Psaki, from Rachel Maddow, from Joy Reid last night on MSNBC. It is the Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com and on the Fox News YouTube page. Right under the description of our live show, you can see it there on your YouTube page. Just click expand. You'll see a subscription link to the Will Cain Show on YouTube. From there, you can watch YouTube shorts. You can watch past exclusive interviews with people like Jordan Peterson, Tony Robbins, Dave Portnoy, Stephen A. Smith. You can also get the Will Cain Show in entirety whenever you want, not just streaming live. So when you're in your car, sitting at your computer at work, and you're a little delayed, you can fire it up whenever you want by subscribing right there below at Will Cain Show. Also, you'll hit subscribe at Apple or Spotify, and you can listen so that you're not watching YouTube while you drive. We always want to promote safety here at the Will Cain Show. She is the host of the Michelle Tafoya podcast. She's former NBC sideline reporter. She is a woman of the world, not just interested in sports, but obviously now as well, more open about her interest in politics. And there's a lot to talk about after Super Tuesday. It is Michelle Tafoya here on The Will Cain Show. Hey, Michelle.
Will, how is it going?
It's going well. It's going well. Got a little energy here.
Yeah, I should say. I'm feeling it as well.
Yeah, you're talking about, you know, you're talking about the political climate. I was actually talking about my physical status. I feel good.
Okay.
I got 8 hours last night. You know, I've only done two Zens today, and I still got a workout ahead of me. So I'm feeling good. I'm hydrating. Michelle, let's talk about, though, the political climate this morning. Let's talk about Super Tuesday. I want to play for you what I think, and everyone is saying it, and sometimes I don't like being the 12th guy on a 10-man dog pile. I don't like climbing to the top of Mount Obvious and screaming the loudest. But I think this is so grotesque that it deserves mention. I want you to listen to Jen Psaki, former White House press secretary, Rachel Maddow, and Joy Reid talking about exit polls, in this case, from Virginia.
I mean, if you look at some of these exit polls, I mean, I live in Virginia. Immigration was the number one issue.
Yes.
I mean, again, these could change in Virginia.
Well, Virginia does have a border with West Virginia. Very, very contested area.
Build
a
wall. Like, what?
Michelle, they're first of all shocked that immigration is a top issue in some place like Virginia. And then they mock voters in that state for making immigration a top issue on Super Tuesday.
I'm as baffled as anybody, but not really surprised. I am amazed that this tone deafness continues to just permeate that network, among others. It's astonishing. It's as though they don't think people in Virginia saw the footage of the illegal immigrants beating up cops on the streets of New York, and then when being released from prison, flipped everybody off. It's as though they think that people don't know about the murder of Lake and Hope Riley in Georgia. It's as though they think that people just don't see these astronomical numbers that have occurred under Joe Biden as being dangerous, not only because of the fentanyl, but because of some of the cases I just described. And you can say, oh, those are anecdotal. Come on. If you look at the numbers, and it becomes pretty clear in the terrorist watch list, those numbers have skyrocketed of people on that list crossing the border or attempting to cross the border. I remember someone saying to me after October 7th and the hideous attack by Hamas in Israel, I wonder if that could happen in America. Well, A, it did already on September 11th and even before that. And B, yeah, if you allow enough people in this country to get together and plan something right under our noses, sure, it could happen. How can you think it wouldn't, or it's just not a concern? This was condescending. And, you know, I don't get offended, really, because that's my choice. But I do find them insulting.
So I had a man yesterday. I did a diner outside of Dallas, Texas, and I had a man pull me aside and say, hey, listen, you know, you guys talk about the border. One of the things I don't ever hear you say, and I would love to hear you guys say, is that on two fronts. One, Joe Biden took an oath to uphold the Constitution. And second, what you're pointing out, the risk to a potential terrorist attack amounts to, for Joe Biden, treason. And what I think is these hosts at MSNBC are playing with fire. Because, as you point out, you know, it feels like not an if, but a when. Yeah. Something happens. Something happens. And we will trace it back to a threat that came over our southern border. And there, I hope there will not be, and there should not be any forgiveness for someone that not only tolerated, but encouraged this level of violation of the oath of the Constitution, who encouraged or tolerated this type of threat to America. And we'll look back on moments like this on MSNBC and go, you laughed. You laughed as the ground was ceded to destroy this building and name your city USA.
Right. Right. I mean, we could trace it back to Joe Biden on the debate stage saying we should surge asylum seekers to the border. That was a clear indication that if he won, he was going to welcome all these. We can trace it back to the endless list of sanctuary cities. We can trace it back to Governor Newsom in California. And if he does step in for Joe Biden, holy cow, people better be paying attention, because what has happened in California, I've spent a lot of time there in the last 4 months. It's my home state. I'll never move back, but I do have relatives there. My family is still there. And when I've been back and I've talked to people from all over the political spectrum who have looked me in the eye and said, we're in trouble. We are in trouble. I've never seen my friends and family this way before in California. And how Governor Newsom has not been recalled successfully is again, it's beyond me. I don't understand California politics. I don't think I ever will. I'm not going to call them a cult like other people would, but I don't understand it. I don't know what they're seeing, except that they're succumbing to the fear of the other side. So, yeah, we can trace it back to a number of things. And I agree with you. I think, you know, they talk about impeaching Mayorkas. To me, this is impeachable against Joe Biden. What he's allowed to happen at our southern border, which so many people now agree is just absolutely egregious and illegal, is to me an impeachable offense.
And then it's also just so out of touch. You know, the effects of illegal immigration have been felt in places like Texas for decades, but
yes,
it's obviously being felt acutely, like in the moment right now, in places like Chicago, New York, Virginia. And then, as you point out, in Georgia, like with the murder of Lake and Riley by an illegal immigrant, how dare you laugh at this being an issue in Virginia? How dare you? And look, our mutual friend Bobby Burak, who writes at Outkick, has a column up right now. I encourage everyone to go check it out at Outkick, where he compares the response, Michelle, between the administration, between top Democrats, between Joe Biden, to the murder of George Floyd, which is, you know, on one level, an anecdote. That's not to be said dismissive, meaning it's a singular incident that was used as an illustration of a greater policy that they wanted to change, which was policing, a policy they now regret changing. But the point is, they used one moment as an illustration of something and gave it the power to manifest real change, as opposed to Lake and Riley's death, which is also, more appropriately, an illustration of a policy that needs to be changed. The effects of a policy. Her death is directly, you can draw a straight line between the policies at our southern border and her murder. And it receives not a mention, barely a mention from the White House, much less as a catalyst or an illustration of changing the way we do business in America.
Not only that, remember when KJP was asked about it for the first time, I think, at the podium, and she said, well, it's an ongoing investigation, so we don't want to comment. Are you kidding me? Are you actually suggesting that you can't comment on this young woman's death because it's an ongoing investigation? But you will jump. You will jump on top of any incident of gun violence and call it gun violence, and guns are bad rather than the people using the guns are bad. And that's a whole nother issue. But you will jump on those like that to make your political points. But a young woman, 22 years old, flat, just murdered, cold-blooded murdered by an illegal immigrant who, by the way, it's not just the southern border policies. It's the New York sanctuary state, sanctuary cities. The guy gets arrested. He gets let go. No one's giving him over to ICE or, you know, it's all of that combined this notion that, oh, we're not going to be bigots, we're going to let everyone have a chance. Well, tell that to Lake and Riley's family. Tell that to the family of the raped 14, 15-year-old in Virginia. Tell that to all the families who have suffered fentanyl deaths. It's what about us? What about us, those of us who are working hard, paying our taxes, have worked our entire lives to live what we believe is the American dream, and you're just welcoming unfettered access to it, unvetted human beings into this country. And people are talking now about all the military-aged Chinese men and military-aged men of a lot of different backgrounds. It's not just families coming across looking for a better life. And we continue to incentivize with these, you know, sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, all the freebies that are given out. And there is no process. And it just represents such chaos and such malfeasance, malpractice at the border. And it's not the fault, it's not the fault of the Border Patrol agents. It's the fault of the policies and the things that were overturned and not reinstated.
So I want to return in just a moment to Joe Biden and whether or not he can be the nominee as Democrat for president. But I'm going to take the steering wheel and I'm not going to jerk it, you know, hard off the highway here. But we're going to just veer for a moment on the topic of leadership, because this is my own personal curiosity. You were a sideline reporter on Sunday Night Football for NBC for years. You got to know a lot of these players. This is somewhat a sports question, but it's more about a personality and leadership question. I am just kind of like, I can't believe the fall from grace that is Russell Wilson, who's been released by the Denver Broncos, Michelle. And it was not that long ago that he was in the debate for best quarterback in the NFL. But beyond that, also kind of seen as like this great dude, great leader. There was an undercurrent of Russell Wilson at all times of like, hey, is it real or is it fake? Like, yeah. You know, he's so nice. He's you know, he wears his Christianity on his sleeve so obviously that somehow it did breed some skepticism. I know this because we were both in sports for so while. Right. I know these conversations existed behind the scenes and to some extent on the air as well. Just some skepticism for him. But nothing like where we are today, which like nobody wants right now. We'll see what happens with free agency. Nobody wants Russell Wilson. So I don't know if you got to know him, but I'm just curious, like, what kind of guy, what kind of leader is Russell Wilson?
We spent a lot of time in Seattle. We spent a lot of time covering the Seahawks. I covered one of his Super Bowls, the one where Marshawn Lynch didn't run into the end zone. Instead, Russell Wilson threw a pick, the infamous play. So I saw a lot. You'll often hear that quarterbacks and their head coaches, when they have these long relationships, like I would say it wasn't probably true in the case of Belichick and Brady. There may have been some commonalities there, but that they share a lot of each other's leadership. And one thing that always stuck out to me was we'd go into these small production meetings and it would be, you know, the announcers, our producer, director, and then Russell would come in and we'd talk. And then Pete Carroll would come in and we'd talk, or vice versa. But what struck me is how similar their two personalities were and are. And I don't want to be in this pile-on situation. But neither of them struck me as particularly authentic. I will say that. Now, some of that I chalked up to, they're talking to the press. They don't want to give away their stuff. I get that. You know, I have to talk to Pete Carroll at halftime. It's probably the last thing he wants to do is defend a play to me or talk about what's next. So I get all of that. And I understood my role in it was just purely to cover the facts, right, and present those. But reflecting on a lot of those meetings, yeah, I felt there were things that were inauthentic, that were not genuine. I've met some of the most incredible people in the NFL. People I would say, damn, I wish you'd run for office. You are a true leader. you are a person I could vote for because you're just commonsensical. You've got leadership qualities. You've got charisma. You command respect. And I didn't necessarily feel that way in Seattle. And I know there's been a lot of talk about it, but it is interesting. And you can look at what's happened in Denver here and whether this was a terrible trade on the part of Denver and, you know, whether Sean Payton was the right guy to pair with Russell Wilson. I think highly doubtful, obviously. So, yeah, this is interesting. It's an interesting time for Russell. I think he'll land somewhere, but where I think he'll land is either amazingly as a backup or a tutor or a guy to prep some other rookie or some other young quarterback. I have no idea where that's going to be.
Right. Well, and I will do that on the Will Cain Sports exclusive on Fridays. Talk more about Russell Wilson and Zach Wilson and Justin Fields and all the quarterbacks in the NFL and where they might end up. But what I was curious about on this front was just about leadership. It's actually, it's where you took it. And I just find it fascinating about leadership. So before we go on from the sort of sports and politics cross section here, I have to follow up. Like, okay, give me your top coach and you, give me your top quarterback that you were like, I wish you would run for office. Your leadership skills are out of sight. I would vote for you for office.
Oh, wow. When it comes to a coach, I'm not sure because we never really, Mike Tomlin actually
yeah?
just came to me.
Mike Tomlin.
Absolutely. Mike Tomlin. I'm glad that came to me because as I was going through, you know, I go through the map of all the different coaches across the NFL, and I landed in Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin. He is a leader of men. We would leave meetings with Mike Tomlin and just want to go run through a brick wall for the guy. And I can understand why his players do too. And so every time people talk about, oh, Mike Tomlin needs to be fired, I just want to shake my head and go, you don't understand what that man brings to the building and what he brings to his players. And they don't always agree with him. But he's okay with that, which is part of what makes him a great leader. He does what he believes is best for the team. And he has an inspiring way about him, an inspiring way of addressing people and making his points. It's creative. He's humorous. He's committed. Yeah. So as far as a coach goes, I would probably say Mike Tomlin. Here's an interesting one as far as I won't necessarily go with a quarterback, but Alejandro Villanueva, who is an offensive lineman, also with Pittsburgh, because he served in the armed services, went to West Point. I loved him. Still do. I love him. A lot of great offensive linemen could run for office. Yeah. Seriously. They are the smartest guys in the building. They have it's a team first mentality. It's not a me first mentality. They have to work as five. They have to take five guys and work together constantly, seamlessly. And that requires a commitment kind of like no other on the team. Now, people might disagree with me, but I think that I would have lived in offensive line rooms as a sideline reporter. Yeah. I just could have gotten so much stuff there. So there were a lot of them, but Alejandro was one of them.
A lot of love there for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I know.
So let's go back to politics now. We'll transition this leadership question. So I'm of the belief, and I opened today's Will Cain show talking about this, that Joe Biden's true opponent in 2024 is not Donald Trump. It is apathy. It is people who are disenchanted and unmotivated to go vote for Joe Biden, even against Donald Trump. And what he'll try to do, what Democrats will try to do, is inflame passions. Now, of that then will be about Donald Trump. It'll be constantly about Donald Trump and whether or not he's a fascist or an authoritarianism and whether or not you're saving democracy. I think they'll lean into abortion. Race is always a card ready to be played to inflame. And by the way, inflammations, passions are, you know, almost like, you know, the best form of leadership, as you point out, is passion driven by inspiration. But the easiest form of passion to foment is division, is to create an other. I mean, by the way, that's in football as well. It's like bulletin board material. Yeah. Nobody believes in us. I hate the other team versus, you know, we are going to do something special here together. A positive passion versus a divisive passion. They will lean in divisiveness. And I think that's the only play right now, because I think Joe Biden he'll use Donald Trump, but he's fighting the non-committed. He's fighting the no-show. He's actually fighting against himself, Joe Biden.
I agree with that. One thing that I think was interesting in what you said at the beginning of your show, and something I wonder about, the Nikki Haley endorsement may mean very little, but I do think the vice presidential pick is going to mean a lot to Donald Trump. And I've heard again and again, and I could be wrong about this. It wouldn't be the first time, but I've heard again and again, the vice presidential pick isn't that important, yada, yada. Tell that to John McCain, because a lot of people saw Sarah Palin as being a heartbeat away and they weren't comfortable with that. So you've got two older presidents, presidential nominees. I think the notion of Kamala Harris being a heartbeat away is terrifying because I don't think she's up to the task. And so I wonder if it matters more now that you don't have a 50 or 60 year old candidate here. You've got these guys who are older. So does it matter more? Can it bring enough voters, do you think, or is it too marginal? So I've heard people saying, including Kayleigh McEnany, the former press secretary for Donald Trump, say Nikki Haley could still be in that conversation for vice president. Woman, she could. I know a lot of Democrats who were willing to vote for her. Does that make her too middle of the road? What is that? I don't know. This whole aspect of the vice president and the cabinet is really interesting to me. And I've often wondered why, as a presidential candidate, you would not present your whole entire cabinet with you at the convention. Here's Vivek Ramaswamy and what he's going to do. Here's Tim Scott and what he's going to do. Here's Glenn Youngkin and what he's going to do. I think that would be so saleable, because now you're surrounding yourself. It's not just about your image, but it's about the people you would put on your team that might convince people that you're not a fascist, that you're not a sexist, that you're not a racist, all of those things. So I find that, I wonder why that isn't done more.
I do think, I'm just, mentally quickly running through the strategy of that. Sometimes an unknown is better than a known, because a known opens yourself up to specific attack. But the reluctant Trump voters that I know, or the reluctant Republicans, all always bring up cabinet, always bring up the people around him. And I do wonder if that would be the one thing that changes someone. I don't think there's much change left for Donald Trump. I don't think there's I should say, outside of minority votes, which show a huge swing towards Donald Trump, black and most notably Latino voters. But I just think after 8 years, 9 years, most people's opinions are pretty, not just crystallized, but cemented on Donald Trump. But the one place I think that there is maybe a little bit of swing is that reluctant Republican who goes, I really like the team around Donald Trump. Do you think at this point that my contention has been, when the handwriting is on the wall, and it is so obvious, remember, the goal is, all that's defined opposition is the two words, Donald Trump. That's it. There is no policy. There is no ideology. I do not believe this thing is moored at this point. I think that Democrats, and then, by the way, the Never Trump as well, was really only defined by opposition to Donald Trump. If Donald Trump said he thought we should raise taxes to 80%, tomorrow Democrats would talk about the terrible impact that would have on the economy. Mm-hmm. That, he could take up the furthest left position that has been held for a decade, and they would all of a sudden flip on that position. They are only defined by opposition to Donald Trump. So when they realize Joe Biden doesn't serve as a useful opposition to Trump, do you think something will happen at the convention? Do you think they'll turn to someone besides Joe Biden to oppose Trump?
It's interesting, because some people have said that's risky as well. If you bring in someone who's an unknown, that people aren't convinced about. And it does seem like Gavin Newsom's been priming the wheels, right? Keeping the greasing the wheels as much as he's greasing his hair, just getting ready to step into the spot. All you would have to do is point to California and how off the rails that state is. So I'm not sure that everyone east of California would agree with that decision, although plenty of people like him. Again, it's a mystery to me. So Michelle Obama is the favorite name people like to throw around. I keep asking myself, who? If you are deciding that it can't be Joe Biden, who is it? It's like that. I'll bring it back to sports. We got to fire our coach. He sucks. Okay, who are you going to bring in? Who are you going to get to replace whoever that coach is? Same with the quarterback. Oh, Kirk Cousins, we can't stand. Who are you going to get? Who? Because you're not getting Tom Brady, and you're not getting Aaron Rodgers, and you're not getting Patrick Mahomes. So who are you going to get? So it's sort of like that with this. Who do you think, Will, is ready and can win?
Well, I put a poll up on my Twitter feed, Will Kane on X, and I said, it's Trump for the GOP. Who will end up being the Democratic nominee for president? It's been up for 2 hours. With 2,000 votes, Joe Biden has 49% of the vote. Gavin Newsom has 25% of the vote. Kamala Harris has 4% of the vote. And other is 21% of the vote. Yesterday, Michelle Obama said she will not run for president. There's been talk of Gretchen Whitmer. I think that the answer that you end up coming back to is Gavin Newsom. And although 49% of the people say it's Joe Biden, and I have people in my mention saying the guy winning 90% in the Democratic primaries. Yeah, because that's all you have right now. In just a minute here on the Will Cain Show, we're going to walk through the exit polls, the Fox News power rankings, and you're going to see the bleak picture for Joe Biden. So in the end, my bet, Michelle, is Gavin Newsom.
That would be my bet as well. And if he loses to Trump, he can run again in 28, and he'll have, you know, he'll have a runway that is already, he's already begun the acceleration on that runway. So we all know this is what he wants. We all know Gavin Newsom wants to run for president, wants to be president. But my gosh, I hope the electorate is smart enough to really look at his policies, the things that he has said and done, lying seems to be a big thing in California. I'm not sure if it's the water. I don't know what it is. But between Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell and Gavin Newsom, boy, they've told some doozies out there. And so I just hope that people aren't swayed by the fact that the guy is tall and takes a good photograph and can, you know, he just speaks like it's just so easy for him.
Yeah. Well, perhaps the greatest testament to the power of Gavin Newsom is that Donald Trump's given him a new nickname, New Scum.
Yeah.
That in and of itself, I think, validates you that you might be a potential threat. Check her out at the Michelle Tafoya podcast. Great friend of the show. Great voice to have on any number of subjects. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Always love it. Thanks, Will.
All right. Take care. We'll update that poll on who will be the Democratic nominee for president in just a moment. And you got to see some of these numbers. It's the Fox News power rankings. It's going to tell you what voters thought, how they really feel about what has ended up being round two, Trump-Biden, inside the numbers, inside the Fox News power poll. Next on The Will Cain Show. Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com, on the Fox News YouTube channel, on the Fox News Facebook page. And right now, if you just drop down underneath the live stream on YouTube, you'll see a button to hit subscribe to The Will Cain Show. Do that, and you can watch us whenever you like, in whole or in part. You can always subscribe to us on Spotify or Apple or Fox News Podcast to listen to The Will Cain Show in audio. Coming up in just a minute, we're going to dive into some of the Fox News power rankings, some of the exit polls from last night. But I was talking with Michelle Tafoya moments ago about my energy level, feeling good today. But that's because on Monday, I was saying when it comes to my workouts, I'm doing this rowing challenge, you know, and I've only got 2 weeks left. I have to row a 5K and I've got a target time. And I just, man, my energy levels just fluctuate massively. And it's because I know my sleep schedule is so atrocious. I've tried to dial in my diet some. I'm trying to drink way more water. And, I'm not trying to quit Zen. But my energy levels are fluctuating. And somebody emailed in, one of you, the listeners, the viewers of The Will Cain Show, emailed in. I don't know if Two-A-Days has this back in the studio. Oh, it's Tinfoil Patrick, who has a quick feedback from a viewer on how do I can control some of my energy levels. What did a viewer of The Will Cain Show say, Tinfoil?
So, Rob Rybacki said, Will, you need to start taking creatine for your training. It will help you tremendously. Check into it.
All right.
And Mark McGuire.
Creatine. Mark McGuire was taking androstenedione. I remember that to this day from the 90s. Thank you, Tinfoil. creatine. I've had that mentioned before, by the way. I've seen some stuff. Like, I took creatine, you know, in college. Everybody was doing that. Pepperdine water polo. And I liked, you know what I liked about creatine versus taking protein powder? You could just take a spoonful, put it in your mouth, and wash it down with water. You didn't have to. Back in the day, the protein powder, you dumped it in, and it was all clumpy, and you had to stir it for 5 minutes if you didn't make a smoothie, if you're just trying to get it in you. And the creatine, boy, you could put that down easy. But then everybody had a freak out about creatine, but now it seems like it's back. People are like, no, 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 that's good stuff, especially as you get older. Take creatine. So I'm open, Rob. I'm open to creatine. Yesterday at a diner in Dallas for Fox and Friends, a lady came up to me and said, hey, you know why your buddy Pete's turning gray? Magnesium deficiency. I'm sure in addition to jacked up circadian rhythm, lack of sleep, getting up early for Fox and Friends, but magnesium. So, you know, homeopath Will, nature's best Will, is all into this stuff. All right, man, I'm about to load up on magnesium and creatine and add it to my vitamin D, vitamin B, and zinc that I take on an irregular basis, just whenever I remember. So maybe that'll help with my energy. I'll let you know how the 5K goes. Let's dive into some of the Fox News power polls, how voters felt specifically on the issues and their enthusiasm for the candidates right now. But let's take a look at the power rankings. Let's look at the map, what it looks like for round two of Biden versus Trump. This is the current electoral map right now in the Fox News power rankings forecast. It's 251 for Trump. I believe it's 241 for Biden, with some swingable states there in the mix. You can see 251 for Trump, 241 for Biden is the current state of play in the electoral college. 270 to win the presidency. Let's put the map back up and you can see which states are necessary or are in play. And we forget this about presidential politics. It always comes down to a few states. What Fox currently projects is the toss-up states are in yellow. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening on podcast, I'll tell you it's Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. The slightly leaning right states, slightly red, are North Carolina and Georgia. And the slightly leaning blue states, the slightly Biden states, are Minnesota and Michigan. So that is strong news for Donald Trump. Here's what I think is stronger news. To illustrate the theme of the day, that I think the opponent for Joe Biden is Joe Biden, that it's a lack of passion, that it's apathy, I want you to take a look at this. I believe we have the enthusiasm reflection among voters for both Trump and Biden. I told you about the non-committed voters in Minnesota and in North Carolina and in Massachusetts, which in some places registered 19%. But the enthusiasm for these two candidates is quite different, with virtually nobody showing enthusiasm for Joe Biden. 72% are dissatisfied right now with how things are going, and 6 in 10 view both Biden and Trump unfavorably. 18% would support a third party candidate, which is going to have a role. It's going to be, you know, as we anticipate, RFK. And while we don't have this, you can take the polls down right now on our video stream on YouTube. While we don't have this particular card, here's what I want to show you. Biden, Trump, 23% of voters enthused about Joe Biden, 48% of Trump voters enthusiastic. It's a pretty big gap. 43% of Biden voters, not enthusiastic, but satisfied. 32% of Trump voters, not enthusiastic, but satisfied. Combine those two, between satisfied and enthusiastic for Biden, 66 for Trump. That is 80-80, either satisfied or enthusiastic. Dissatisfied, 9% for Trump, 26% for Biden. He has a problem of Democratic voters staying home. He has a problem showing up to vote for Joe Biden. I've said that I think the opinions and the vote for Donald Trump is largely cemented. There is an exception. It is minority voters. And we can go to that now. Inside the Fox News Power Rankings exit polls, you can see a shift in minority voters moving toward Donald Trump. 28% of black voters now support Donald Trump versus Biden in February of 2020. So that represents a sevenfold increase, 28%. Young voters, 51%. We always hear about young voters. That's under 30 years old. 51% Donald Trump. and Latinos. Near record support for Hispanics, 48%. By the way, suburban women at 43%. That Hispanic vote, it's up from like in the 20s. So look, if you take the minority vote and the way it shifted to Donald Trump, and you combine that with the lack of enthusiasm for Joe Biden, you have a potential landslide for Donald Trump. That's why all this adds up to me for Democrats making a change at the convention, for moving on from Joe Biden. First, starting tomorrow, they will inflame passions. They will divide America on race, on abortion, on threats to democracy, on authoritarianism, on accusations of fascism. That will start with the State of the Union. But after that fails, and by the way, there is, New York Times has written about this, fatigue within the resistance. Fatigue about constantly seeing Donald Trump as an existential threat to America. Once that fails, they have to move on from Joe Biden. We'll break down the State of the Union tomorrow right here on The Will Cain Show, where we're going to be streaming live from the American Rodeo in Arlington, Texas. We'll be there with the rodeo grounds right behind us, maybe even me on a horse, while we get you ready for the State of the Union. Subscribe to The Will Cain Show. Go do it right now. There's a little button probably in the video, and there's a link right below. Hit subscribe, and not only will we see you next time, we'll see you every time right here on The Will Cain Show. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.